Welcome to Societal Shapers, a podcast by PL Cadilla, the place to get inspired, find your purpose and courage, and get tools to become the next female leader, creating real results and meaningful changes.
Hi, welcome to Societal Shapers podcast. Today I have FICO, 30 years old, and she has 6 years of experience in the nonprofit sector. And she's earned a master's degree at the Erasmus University Rotterdam, the International Institute of Social Studies in Development Studies. She has diverse work experience as a program support personnel in planning, monitoring, evaluation, reporting, and knowledge management in NGOs. So what attracted me to FICO was really her experience as a gender specialist. So we will dive deeper into this. And before that, let's get in FICO to introduce more about herself. So FICO, please take it away.
Thank you very much, PL. Especially thank you for this opportunity. We have been talking for a while to prepare this conversation. So yeah, you have a bit introduced me. So I just want to add now I'm working as a gender specialist in PPIM UIN Jakarta. So PPIM UIN is the Center for the Advancement Research and Policy Studies on Islamic Education and Socio-Religious Development in Indonesia. So UIN Jakarta is an Islamic State University, ITS in Jakarta. So basically my responsibility is, my responsibility is to ensure gender mainstreaming in every programs and also management system under PPIM. So yeah, it's also related to my past experiences and also my study in ISS. And yeah, I just graduated like last year, and now, you know, struggling because of the COVID-19 pandemic. So now stopped working from home. It's not really easy, but
tell us a bit more about your family and educational background. How did you find this, you know, passion in gender equality?
So okay, I just make a little really brief introduction about my background. So my father was a teacher and my mother is a housewife. I'm the third of seven siblings, so it's really a big family, especially in Indonesia. And with this big family, my parents, you know, create me to be more independent because I have several siblings, and also I think that I need to be successful in the future, which at the time I didn't know what kind of success I mean. So I study hard, and also after I graduated senior high school, I studied in University of Indonesia. At the time that, for the first time in my life, I think I learned a lot of things about gender, sexuality, young people, development issues. And after I graduated, I work in an NGO called Aliansi Remaja Independent. In English, it's Independent Young People Alliance, which focusing on how young people in the age 10 to 24 years old can, you know, voice out their needs, especially in the issue of health, education, and employment. So that's, I think, the first stage of my career that saved me until today, and why I focusing on, for example, in gender, or maybe young people, and also children. So yeah, that's a bit.
So what sparked your interest to work in this particular area, right? So there's also part in your CV that says you work on children, youth, and empowerment issues. And then this gender equality per se. Was it something which you experienced or which you witnessed that motivated you?
So yeah, my interest when I joined ARI or Aliansi Remaja Independent, I just made it short ARI. So when I was working there, when I graduated, I worked in the private sector, but I didn't feel that I have passion, because I just only working to translate several things from English into Indonesian. And also I was working also as a journalist, but I think that's not my passion. And then I moved into NGO. And when I work in ARI, I learn a lot of things. I learned about children, youth, and women empowerment issue. When I think joined only for 3 months as an officer, and then they select me to be national coordinator in ARI, and for 3 years from 2013 to 2015. At the time, it shaped me really not only, so in ARI, not only I work, but also I learn. So it's like learning by doing, because I work together with young people to fight for our rights to the Indonesian government. In Indonesia, young people still seem not really, you know, their voice still not considered as a voice, because they have parents, they have adults who can say for what they want. So in this organization, I learned that we are, as young people, we can voice out our needs. So on how we can, how we learn inside. So we did many a lot of trainings, and also we encourage, we call it young advocate, as a champion that they can advocate to the government. So at the time, we are really close to the advocacy with Ministry of Health, Ministry of Education, and also we did not many advocacy also to many young people to, you know, to influence them, to understand for what is their problem. Not only they can be tokenistic. Yeah. To what adult wants. So that's, no, I think that...
This is interesting. I just want to pause for a while and ask, what is it that the young people want different from what the adults want?
So I think the difference is because of, you know, the adults has, they were young people at the time when they were.
Yeah.
And, but time is different. Need is different. When now we are young people, we have different needs because technology change, issues change, the needs also change. So it is really important to see young people as a subject for what they need. So we see, so for example, it's really, for example, we advocate for the need of comprehensive sexuality education to our government, because we see that and we understand that young people need comprehensive sexuality education in order to, we can, you know, decide what is good for our bodies, what is good for our sexualities, and also we understand about gender, not only for example male or female, but also other gender identities, that we see very broad issues of if we can get comprehensive sexuality education into our curriculum. That's for example that we advocate. So we see that as our need. Also, there are many studies and also research that say that there are many young people who start sex in early age without they are knowing that that it's really harmful for them. For example, what I mean with harmful is they didn't know that it will be, you know, if they can get infectious with the STI or maybe with other or maybe if they get raped from their boyfriend. Because they, you know, because the boyfriend asked them to do so. If they get comprehensive sexual education, for example, from the government, they also learn on how to, you know, to have a power to bargain their position, for example, as a younger when they are in relationship with a young guy. So that's also that's really related issue for us as young people at the time, for example, that what we are talking about.
That's very interesting. So what is the most exciting part of your job? Aha moments or highlights this year?
So I think there is one really interesting experience so far that I'm really proud of it. So when I was as national coordinator in ARI, that there is one experience we involved as the third plaintiff in judicial review of marriage law number 1 year 1974 in Indonesia, that we asked the we involved with the not only us but also with the woman organization and also children organization to support the increase of marriage age from 16 into 19 for younger. So in that law say that a girl can marry in the age of 16. So we asked the constitutional court to increase marriage age because we understand, and I think everybody knows that 16 is children according to the Convention on the Rights of the Child, and also even in, according to the child protection law in Indonesia. So it why we want to increase, because if younger marry in the very young age, most probably they will stop their education because they will shy to go to the school because they are married. And also they will, you know, if they get pregnant, their physical body, it's not ready yet. And also their mental, they haven't prepared yet for become young mother, because they, you know, still young and maybe they still want to play and everything else. And there are many cases that younger are married because they are forced with their parents. So at the time, we also not only do as the third plaintiff to the Constitutional Court, but we also mobilize many young people to do online campaign to support to increase marriage age. At the time, there are many, you know, for example, opposite from many people who disagree with us because they think it's, you know, marriage in the 16 is okay in the according to religion in Indonesia, because we are Islamic, most of us are Muslim, so many you know, are a contra argument to us. So yeah, even though that in 2015 that our judicial review was failed, that was rejected by the Constitutional Court, we did not you know, we didn't give up. In 2019, our legislative our parliament agreed to increase marriage age from 16 even into 19. So it's more 1 year, and it's really good, because at least even in the law it's 19, but yeah, we know on the ground maybe still there are many younger who are married, but at least we did something that we can do. So that I think one of the best experience for us as the only youth-led organization at the time who involved to increase marriage age in the judicial review process in the Constitutional Court.
So, I want to say a very big congratulations for being able to champion that, because yeah. I know how difficult it is, because Malaysia still struggles with it.
Okay.
So, you know, given the fact that Indonesia, with a 260 million population versus a 32 million population in Malaysia, being able to get that law passed, despite it being, you know, rejected for a few times or whatever it is in the past, but you managed to get it through. So well done.
Yeah.
And I just want people, you know, people who are listening to this podcast to know that even though the marriage age has been increased from 16 to 19, it makes a world of a difference for so many women out there, so many teenagers out there. And so these are the little things that people don't take seriously. And, you know, in Malaysia, I just want to give a bit of context, but this was actually highlighted in one of our newspapers last year, that, you know, this was put into motion, which is to increase the marrying age from 16 to 18, not even 19, and 7 states in Malaysia rejected it. So only 3 states that accepted it. So we're still kind of in that limbo. And I have to say, you know, shame on us for not being able to achieve this, because, you know, those who are opposed of this law is clearly trying to protect their interests. And I have to say, you know, it's either, difficult for me to see women wanting this to be implemented, right? It's more of the men who want to be able to see this. So I think that's something which is incredible. And you must be very proud to have been part of this initiative. So well done. I just want to give that space and moment to congratulate you in that. So, you know, that's amazing. So anyways, what have you found frustrating and challenging in your work?
So there are, of course, a lot of things that we found challenging in our work, already in my work. So as I mentioned before, that I have really big passion in, you know, an issue about gender equality or the young people. So at least I see that sometimes I feel really frustrated. You know, I think not only me, maybe most of people who are working in the NGOs or maybe in development issues, that we are working, for example, in gender equality issues. That there is the every time, every year, we know there are a lot of cases increase of sexual violence, for example, for women or maybe other gender. So there are many, you know, violence. So every time I read a newspaper or maybe online news that there are many sexual violence in the public space, sexual violence in the public transportation, or maybe, and sometimes also when the issue is come up into the court, sometimes the, I don't know, for example, the woman is not get enough, you know, justice or fair justice to get it. So sometimes, for me, sometimes it makes me like, oh my God, I did a lot. I think I did a lot of things what I can do. You know, for example, we did a campaign on how to prevent, you know, sexual violence, and on how also we also advocate to the government on how the government can accept the comprehensive sexual education. Or maybe, for example, we also did to, you know, the advocacy in child marriage. So, but also I see and understand that an issue to increase knowledge and also awareness for public on, for example, is an issue on gender equality. It's not really easy, and not only me, I think many people also get frustrated. We work on this for many years, since in the past and until maybe in the future. So it's not really easy, and also we understand that the patriarchal culture in our country is, it's still exists, of course, and even in my family, I can still feel it. So, but it's really frustrating sometimes. But also, that's, it's okay. It means we are working, and also we are thinking about how to change the things. Other things I think is also about what else? For example, mostly it's about the gender equality issues.
Yeah, so just bringing you back earlier to the point where you said, you know, in Indonesia, it's still a very patriarchal system, right? Mm-hmm. So do you think, is that more cultural or more religious?
I think it's mixed. So because religion is coming, for example, in Indonesia, we know that Islam is a big, there are many Muslims in Indonesia. And even though Islam is the last religion who came to Indonesia, but it has big influence, not only in the politics and everything else, but also in the daily life. So religion and culture, it's like combination. They mix each other, and how they, you know, and how they complement, influence each other. But also, so yeah, that's from the patriarchal, you know, perspective. But also I think regarding religion, there are also in Indonesia many ulama or who are, you know, support to, for example, support gender equality, even though their number is not really that much more, you know, but they have voice. We also make, you know, like for example, there are many initiatives that I found on online, on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and everything else, Facebook, they're talking about on how religion, especially in Islam, because I'm Muslim, that's what I know, you know, support the gender equality. There are many verses in Al Quran, for example, but also support the gender equality.
I think that's also a similar situation in Malaysia, and I think that stemmed out of a religion predominantly, and then that becomes a culture, right? So something which started off as a religion, and then, you know, some people take it out of context, and then just becomes embedded as part of a culture. And so now to decouple that, it is really difficult. And understandably, you know, the process will take long, but I think, you know, we have been fighting for this for a very long time, and therefore progress looks very slow. And, you know, it should speed up. And the question is, how do we do that? How do we speed it up, right? So I wanna ask you the next question, which is, how do you feel that your current political system and public sector space, you know, does it lack any female participation and women leaders that contributes to a better society?
So, yeah, okay. I will only take one example of regarding in the political system and how women can participate. In Indonesia, we have a regulation that said at least there should be 30% of women representation in legislative. And how women can involve in legislative, it started from you know, political parties in Indonesia. They should have also women, you know, candidates when they want to enter to legislative system. So, but apparently, even though that we have the regulation already, but for this period, for example, in our legislative or in the parliament, that if there is only like 20% that women who are in the parliament. And so what that number say? There are a lot of questions that could be asked. For example, why there's only 20%, even though that there's already a regulation 30%. It could be that woman has still lack of capacity to be, for example, in the political party, on how they can struggle in political party to be candidate in the legislative. And also, for example, and how the political party itself can, increase the capacity building of women in the political parties, and also how to they can, attract many women to join the political parties. And also, even though there is 20%, there's also the question, are the women who are in the parliament, they can fight for women's rights?
Yeah.
So is that only a number? No, yeah. But the quality is low. So
exactly.
Yeah, it's
what do you think?
I think, what I think and what I see, there are also several women in the parliament that I know, because we did many advocacy with them, are really good. They understand about gender equality, but their number is really small. Compared to the
1% out of the 20%.
No, I don't know about the number. I know some of them, but also they are also, for example, to fill this number, they are also political party who to ask the celebrity, woman celebrity to join, and then they become legislative member. And yeah, that's because they are females and everything else, and also they are women, so political party needed to fill that gap. So sometimes also they didn't really work. They don't really understand what kind of their job. So sometimes they make, for me, it's like a joke when I read a newspaper that this, for example, a celebrity who become a legislative member, I don't know, what is her background? What is her, does she know the political situation?
Yes.
So yeah. But I didn't want to discourage. What I mean is quantity is good, but the quality also more important to be considered.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you, right? So we don't want women as tokens who are just there to fill up the numbers or the quotas.
Yes.
Right? We want women, real women with substance, intelligent women, women who voices out, who has the courage and the confidence to voice out on behalf of the community and the society, right? So it's not just about women being in parliament to fight for women's rights. It is women being in parliament and legislative, part of the legislative system to fight for societal rights, right? As a community and society. And, before we started the podcast, if Franco and I had a brief conversation, and we talked about, how the world is such a male-dominated world where there's so much masculine energy and that feminine energy is just missing, which is about love and empathy and compassion and the ability to really, to slow down and stop and pause and see, is this now benefiting the people and the planet, or is it really benefiting a group of individuals, a group of elites who are benefiting from this economic growth, that consumption model that we have? And so, thank you so much for sharing on that part, Faiko, because this is the truth, right? So it's something which is what you see and you feel as a citizen, but then there's also what truly happens in the background that we don't know, like, the normal people, like general public, like you and I would not know. So from what I've seen in Malaysia, for example, is that, we definitely lack quality female leaders, in which itself is a huge problem, right? So I feel that the women who are in, in the public sector space, in legislative, parliament, etc., they're not making the impact that they should, but understandably so, because it's a lot more smaller group, therefore to amplify their voice is not easy, and therefore they've got a lot of pushbacks or just those resistant towards changes, and it's not easy. So hopefully, for people who are listening to this podcast, this problem is not just a Malaysian problem, it's not just an Indonesian problem.
Yeah.
It is a worldwide problem, and more importantly, this region needs it more than anything else, because with population growth, we're going to be, 9.5, 10 billion population in just the next 30 years, right? Mm. By 2050. Mm. And you know, more than 50% of that population is going to be concentrated in our region. Can you imagine how populated this region will be? And if we don't plan for the people and planet's well-being from now, you know, we're basically going to doom ourselves. So, you know, on that question, I want to take you to this question of, so what keeps you awake at night?
Well, that's, there are a lot of things, like, for, okay, what keeps me awake? Like, okay, for example, when I did an advocacy for child marriage, that was really, really frustrating, especially when we got rejection in 2015. That was like, oh my God, we fight not for me, myself, or for my organization, or for certain organization, but we fight for younger in Indonesia.
Yes.
We fight for younger from who live in the city, who live in the, you know, in the villages. We fight for them.
Yes.
Like that's really, really actually frustrating. And also sometimes if, you know, also another issue, if I heard about, you know, sexual violence or for example, we have an institution called Komnas Perempuan. It's an institution that's focusing on, you know, that's a national institution, belong to the government, but they are working, one of their working, and they, you know, they documented how many, you know, violence against women happens. And every year they make like a report. And every year the report on sexual violence, for example, not only in the public, but also in the private area, in the house, it happens. And it, for me, I always like to come, but also like, it's very, really frustrating to see and to read how many data that is available that's regarding the sexual violence. And yeah, that's, but also sometimes for me, what this make me awake also, sometimes I think, because I studied in the Netherlands, sometimes I think I just want to live here. I want to stay longer in Netherlands, finding a job and living really happy there, because they are really supporting gender equality. They support those, you know, many things that I couldn't get it in my country.
Right.
But I decided to come, to go home. Because I know that, I think maybe I'm only one.
This is where they need you. They need people like you.
That's why I want to go home and I want to make a change, even though small change.
Yes.
But not only well, me. But,
I love it. Great reason and purpose to come back to Indonesia and serve.
Yeah.
So just on that point, right? So you, before this, the thing that kept you awake at night was because, you know, the legislation got rejected of increasing the age of a legal marriage. So now that's been passed, what's next? What are you guys fighting for next?
There is one. So we have a bill. In now, it's still the draft in the legislative. It's the bill to support, you know, to eliminate sexual violence for not only for women, but for everyone. So we haven't yet that kind of bill in Indonesia. It's really, for me, shameful, because there are a lot of cases on it. So that bill is still in the legislative, and we, not only me, but also many, you know, women movement, organization, and everyone encourage the legislative or the parliament to pass the bill, because that bill can protect many women, can protect many victims. Because for now, there are many, you know, there are many cases, but there is no law who can protect us.
Yeah.
So
is that data, hard data on the rise of sexual violence?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I'm just wondering what it is here in Malaysia, because it's interesting. Once, you know, you've managed to increase the minimum number of age for marriage. Mm. So you kind of wonder then what's next, right? Would it be to educate women, to ensure that they're at school, to ensure that they get the right kind of education that they need? So, yeah.
Okay, regarding after increasing the legal age of marriage, what we do, also what there are many organizations who are working on it. So we try to increase the knowledge of public, especially, you know, religious leaders and also parents, to understand that they couldn't encourage younger to marry in the young age. So there are many initiatives, there are many working have been done, and we are still working on it.
But is this coming from the government, or is this coming from the grassroots, like NGOs?
Yes, most NGOs. I think the government, they did something, but you know, I don't know. Still, yes. Sporadic.
So this is an example of whereby this next step should be institutionalized, right? So the next logical step is to then educate everybody why that we have increased the minimum age. You know, what's the reason? How does it protect our women? How does it protect these girls? And so that should be institutionalized, and it shouldn't be the NGO's job. So that's what people need to understand.
But also we try to work together with the government. I mean, we understand, they say that we couldn't do it ourselves. The government always said that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so that's why the NGO working together with the government, not only we educate the public, but also we educate the government.
Yeah.
Their responsibility.
I feel the same way how the government can put out an announcement to say everybody must wear their safety belts. Or you know, everybody must follow this rule. It's the same thing with sex education, right? The same way how they disseminate this information, same way they should disseminate all this other important things. So if they say, you know, we don't have it, I would question a lot of that. It's priority, right? What is it that they're prioritizing? The kind of information that you share out is about, you know, for example, the economic stimulus. Immediately that's being shared out to the large population, because to know that, hey, here's help from the government, come and get. So the same way how you disseminate the information, is why can't you disseminate that kind of information, awareness and education, and incorporate it in schools, from the teachers, from the community heads, community leaders. So if there's a will, there's a way. But it's great that, you know, what you guys are doing, and Malaysia should also take inspiration from this, the fact that, you know, you've legalized the minimum age to 19. We should look at that. Okay, so for the next question, right? So this is a bonus question. Okay. How would you change the world, or at least Indonesia, if you were the president of your country?
You know, that's actually a really hard question. That's really, really hard because, okay.
Well, being a president is not an easy job. So,
if I were a president, for example, so there are a lot, of course, as a president, there are a lot of things, you know, you need to understand. Economic, political, I don't know, or not only political, quote unquote, but also political in how, you know, can bargain your position with other, you know, people from another parties, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, of course, that's not easy, of course. But if I were president, I imagine that most probably because also my expertise in gender, of course, I was focusing on how to increase, you know, on how to increase awareness on gender equality in Indonesia, giving more space for women to participate in politics and also in publics. And also, for example, this is something that many people are not talking about, and how, you know, talking about the bargaining position of women in the household, how women can impact in the household, and how, you know, how they can share the burden, and how, for example, to give father leave when his wife give birth. So that's really, really, really small things, but also really impactful for women. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing. The other things, of course, about how to prevent and how to decrease sexual violence in Indonesia. And there are a lot of, you know, my aspiration in the issue of gender equality, of course, but because gender equality issue is not the issue for now, what I see. It's not the issue that the government put in priority. Our government put the priority in about economic growth, which is, that's really good, of course, because we need to, you know, fight with other countries, et cetera, et cetera. We want to increase our income and our GDP and et cetera. So, which I think if I were president, I need to consult also on how to understand about GDP and et cetera. So yeah, but that's my dream, my vision, of course, yeah.
So that's a really interesting answer. So we know definitely, you know, for when it comes to like equality and equity, we don't have to worry because you got that covered. But when it comes to leading on the other areas where you are not familiar with, instead of taking charge and still making decisions, your what you would do is you would engage the experts to advise you then on how do I do this, right? So yeah, a lot of people should hear that because not one person can be an expert and know everything. And it's really, really important to be able to surround ourselves with the people who are smart, but also that has good values and principles.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's what our current leaders are lacking. There's good people around them, advising them the right thing, and things with value, integrity, and ethics. So thank you so much, Faiko, for being with us today and sharing your experience as an Indonesian young female fighter for gender equality. So just before we finally finish up the podcast, who do you look up to and who do you draw inspiration from? It could be a person or a book or just any resource.
So I think inspiration can come from everyone. And it can, you can get it every day sometimes. And for me, what is real from inspiration, I get it from my interaction with many women leaders in Indonesia. I mean, she is a leader in the small organization, but she's really passionate. She is really good on how she can manage the organization. That's my inspiration. And also, for example, but also from my mom, for example, I got inspiration from her on how she can manage the household and how can I do that? I mean, for example, because she's a housewife, but I'm working. So I imagine if I'm just a housewife, can I be a housewife only in my house? Can I do that? So it's also, for me, it's I need to put my understanding on her shoes to understand so maybe she doesn't understand about gender equality, but she give me inspiration on how, for example, she passionate about what she does. But also inspiration can come from many leaders. For me, I always get inspired with the many country leaders who are from another country. For example, like recently we know that how the Prime Minister of New Zealand, Jacinda Ardern can, tackle the issue of COVID-19 in her country. That's really amazing, right? I was really, oh my God, I just feel I want to move to New Zealand. That's really amazing compared to another countries. I mean, in Indonesia, we are struggling really hard. The case still increasing, but our government introducing already the new normal. We need to get to work. So that's really insane, right? So yeah, there are many aspects, of course, that maybe I didn't understand. I don't understand about it. But what I see, for example, from the Prime Minister of New Zealand, she is really passionate about her job. She is really strong. She can control her country really good. I think that's a really good example of how a woman leader can, become a leader for a country. So, yeah. And maybe, of course, there are many inspiration also made from you. You made this podcast, which is, I think, this is really interesting. You did small thing, but you can inspire many young women
hopefully.
Yeah, I hope also. So inspiration can come from everyone, I think.
Yes, I completely agree. So thank you so much, Faiko, for joining us again. Thank you. We hope to see you again the next time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening in. If you liked it, give it a thumbs up, subscribe, leave a comment, and share with your friends. Be sure to tune in to the next episode. And to find out how to be part of Societal Shapers, head to www.plcadilla.com and check out our coaching programs. Catch you soon!